topic for tonight, the last in our series on Megillas Rus, Megillat Rut, the Book of Ruth, however you choose to say it, is the as I titled it here, Ruth as the Eshet Chayil. The sheets in front of you have, aside from the various sources here, the opening segment, the beginning of Mishlei Perek Lamed Aleph, the 31st chapter in Mishlei. It continues then. It continues then with what you'll see there in the Sidur on page 358. The Eshet Chayil is best known as the paragraph that Jewish men sing at the table to their wives on Friday night, or mercifully do not sing if their wives would be happier that way. Right. We'll talk a little bit about who exactly is the target, so to speak, of this song. And the contention I'd like to bring tonight is that, in fact, the subject of Eshet Chayil is none other than Ruth. I believe I have some pretty good evidence to support the idea. What we usually call Eshet Chayil is published in the book of Mishlei in the 31st Perek. It is, as you see on page 358 in that art scroll sitter, a poem using the alphabet, the letters from Aleph, all the way through Tav at the end. We don't even skip the Nun. We use the alphabet. This is popular within Tanakh. It's popular certainly in Jewish poetry after the time of Tanakh, showing that we're using all the letters at our disposal, all the powers at our disposal to express whatever it is that we're trying to express there. It's also useful. I saw another explanation for why we have acrostics, that it's meant as a mnemonic. It's easier to remember because you think, oh, now I'm up to the Lamed line. Okay, so I know it starts with a Lamed, and therefore it's easier on the mind. I brought you here on your sheet two key elements here, sources 1 and 2. First of all, Eshet Chayil is not the sum of the 31st chapter in Mishlei. It actually begins with Pasuk Yud in the Perek. The first 9 psukim are decidedly less well known, and they're very important because they tell us who is writing Eshet Chayil and for what purpose. So we're going to come back to those, but just realize that, in fact, this is not Mishlei 31. It's Mishlei 31, sentences 10 to the end. The other thing that's important to see is source number 2, which is a breakdown of Eshet Chayil. This is done by the Dat Mikra edition of Mishlei, where they show you the praises of the Eshet Chayil that appear within the poem. The first 3 lines describe that the husband is fortunate, simply that he can trust her, that she's going to provide for him. Then the next 6 lines talk about how she works hard, both when she is needy and when the family is wealthy. Then the next segment, Psukim Yutet to Chaf Hei, sentences 19 to 25, talk about how she is generous to the needy as well as to her family. 2 lines about how she teaches her household to be generous. She teaches Chesed. And then lastly, so she is to be praised. That's your breakdown in this poem. It describes these different elements. It's important to identify these elements in order to see, number one, that this is not simply a laundry list of praises, but there is structure in Eshet Chayil. And number two, to see that specific traits are being praised, traits which we are going to identify with the story of Ruth. Let's go back a moment to source number 1 and the introduction to Ruth, to Eshet Chayil, excuse me. It begins, and you have the Hebrew there as well as the English. The English is a modified version of the JPS translation. I modified it to humanize it a little bit. I took out the these and the thous to make it a little more readable. But basically, it's their translation. Divrei Lemuel Melech, the words of King Lemuel. Anybody remember a King Lemuel on the list of Jewish kings? No, not me neither. A Masa is a type of a prophecy. We find some of the Nevi'im use that term. Literally, it's a burden, though. Asher Yisarto Imo, with which his mother, the JPS renders it, corrected him. Yisarto is stronger than corrected. Yisarto is like Musar. Rebuked him. This is the rebuke that King Lemuel's mother offers him. She says, Ma bri, uma bar bitni, what is this, my son? And what, son of my womb? Uma bar nidri, and what, the son of my vows? The expression of someone who has vowed to God, I will do X if you give me a child. Think of Shmuel and his mother Chana. Al titeim anashim chelecha. Udrachacha limchos malchim. He says, do not give your strength to women, nor your ways to that which destroys kings. This is her warning to her son. It is not for kings, Lemuel. It is not for kings to drink wine, nor for princes to say, where is strong drink, lest they drink and forget that which is decreed, and pervert the justice due to any who are afflicted. Who's supposed to drink? Give strong drink to one who is ready to perish, and wine for the bitter in soul. And the practice was, in fact, that if someone was going to be executed by the Beis Din, they would give them wine that was actually drugged wine in order to intoxicate them. The Abu Dram says that's the origin of our practice of saying Savri and L'chaim before drinking, is to say this is, should be for life. This is not that variety of drink. So let him drink and forget his poverty and remember his misery no more. Open your mouth for the mute in the cause of all who are appointed to destruction, all those who are in trouble. Open your mouth, judge righteously, and plead for the cause of the poor and needy. And then from there she goes into Eshes Chayel Mi Yimsa, a wife of Chayel will come back to Chayel, who will find dot, dot, dot.
All this so far is counsel to her son.
You bet.
But the rest of it is not.
Says who?
Is he telling her, is she telling him what kind of a wife he should get?
Bingo. That's precisely what I believe she is telling him. She said, you know you're being recorded. Let the record show. Remember that she opened her instruction by saying, do not give your strength to women nor your ways to that which destroys kings. Don't marry the wrong girl or don't go pursuing women. This is what you should look for. The Eshes Chayel. Her instruction to Lemuel. Again, who is Lemuel? Well, we need to know who's writing Mishlei. So take a look at source number 3, please, the Gemara in Bava Basra. Chizkiah and his group wrote Yeshaya, Mishlei, Shir HaShirim, and Kohelet. Chizkiah and crew. Rashi there informs you it's really a group of sages in the days of King Chizkiah assembling various statements. Okay, that's good. Who wrote the statements initially? So take a look at source number 4, a Gemara in Brachos, which tries to provide us with a sense of authorship. Rabbi Yochanan quoted Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. What is the meaning of, famous line, Piha pascha b'chochma v'saras chesed al shona? She opened her mouth with knowledge and the Torah of generosity is on her tongue. Who said that? What is the meaning of the line? Opposite whom did Shlomo recite this sentence? Who was the topic of this sentence? And the Gemara goes on to discuss it. But the point that I'm trying to bring here is, they assume it is Shlomo speaking. And indeed, that's the standard assumption, that Shlomo HaMelech is the author of Mishlei, Koheles, Shir HaShirim. We generally assume Shir HaShirim is the song of his youth. Mishlei, as he is aging, and Koheles in his old age and is reflecting on his life and the searching he's done. The Gemara clearly believes here that it is Shlomo. In fact, the Medrash in Vayikra Rabbah suggests that the term Lemuel, take a look at source number 5, on Al Lamlachim Lemuel, it is not for kings Lemuel. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Einosnim Malchus Lemisha Maflig Al Devarim Shel Kel. We do not give monarchy to one who contradicts the words of God. She's telling him, Lamo Kel, opposite God. Don't be Lemuel, don't be opposite God. So in other words, Al Lamlachim Lemuel is not a statement of that is not for kings Lemuel, or Divrei Lemuel Melech. But rather, what she's saying is, don't be a Lemuel. Don't be somebody who is Lamo Kael, who stands opposite God. Others render Lemuel slightly differently. Rashi says it means to stand with God. God is with him. But Rashi also believes that Shlomo. Ralbag believes that Shlomo. Ibn Ezra believes that Shlomo. Ibn Ezra says that the beginning of the book is his father, David, criticizing him, and the end of the book is his mother criticizing him, which I suppose is a good way to write, huh? But Ibn Ezra says, this is Shlomo HaMelech, and he's being critiqued front and back in this book. Leave aside the challenge of the critics, and can I gauge the age of the book based on some of the words that are used? There are some clues in the book, such as we just read the second line in source number one, Ma Bari Uma Bar Bitni, the term Bari being used for my son, that's Aramaic. Right, rather than Bini, which I would have expected. So there are linguistic clues as to when exactly this came into the written form that we now have. That's not what I'm here today to address. Rather, the view classically is Shlomo HaMelech is the originator of these lines that get written down by Chizkiah or by people in Chizkiah's day and form the book of Mishlei that we now have, and the Eish Eschayil that we now have. So what we have accomplished is, we've seen that, number one, the Eish Eschayil seems to be part of a mother's rebuke to her son, the king, that son being Shlomo, based on the way that that we classically understand the authorship of Mishlei. Who is Shlomo's mother? Bathsheba. Well, that adds a whole new angle on this. Bathsheba is not an anonymous woman in Tanakh about whom we know nothing. There are a few of those. Bathsheba isn't one of them. We know quite a bit about Bathsheba, right? The most famous story, obviously, her marriage to Uriah, the dissolution of that marriage to Uriah, and her marriage to David. But there's more to Bathsheba than that incident, in which, frankly, she is mute. We don't actually know anything about what she wants in that story. Unlike, say, Avishag, where we know her life and what she wants before she ever marries David, with Bathsheba, we don't have a clue. However, once she's married to him, we know quite a bit. What's the big story that she's involved in? I believe it's the Haftarah for Chaye Sarah every year.
Near the end of David's life, when one of his sons rebels.
Right. Adoniyahu rebels, right? Word comes to her through Nasan Hanavi, who comes to her, not to David, and says, what should we do? And they plan together to inform David, because she says, well, my son was supposed to become king. You promised that Shlomo was going to be the king. That's round one. But it's not where it ends. Because David says to Shlomo, deal with him wisely. Deal with Adoniyahu wisely. Shlomo decides to leave him alive, as long as he's going to be a good boy. And then comes round two. In round two, Adoniyahu comes to Bathsheba and says, please, I have this one little request. It's a nothing request. I hope it's okay. I've fallen for Avishag Hashunamit, the concubine who wasn't, right? Whose job it was to be the Sochenet, to warm David at the end of his life. I've fallen for her. And I want to ask King Shlomo directly for this. Do you think you might say something to your son and, you know, maybe it will be okay? She knows exactly what he has in mind. No one is allowed to marry the concubine of the wife of the previous king. Marrying the concubine is a sign that you are the new king. What he's trying to do is, yes, he's trying to restore life to his candidacy as Melech. And she gets it. And she very cleverly goes to Shlomo. And rather than do what Adoniyahu has asked, which is to say, hey, do you think you could maybe see your way to letting them? Adoniyahu came to me and he had this thought. And just by saying that, she tips off her son that this is in fact a plot. Shlomo then, at that point, has had enough of Adoniyahu. Adoniyahu exits stage left. Bathsheba is somebody with significant credentials in terms of making things happen. She reminds me most in Tanakh of Rivka, as someone who works behind the scenes to get exactly what she wants without having to do the heavy lifting.
Also, if she was bathing in an area where nobody could see her, like in the beginning, that means that she was part of a family of position and power, because they were near the
palace. Possible, although that would have been more a function of her husband, probably, than her. In other words, that he's the one who has the house. She lives there. That's the assumption.
Oh, yeah. But he was a captain or a general? big shot.
Some kind of serious soldier. Yeah. So keep that in mind regarding Bathsheba and the advice she is going to give to Shlomo regarding the wife he should seek, because I think that matters a great deal. Who is the woman here in Eish Es Chayil? It is exceedingly unlikely that we are actually referring to a wife of Shlomo. Number one, because none of Shlomo's wives are presented in Tanakh as people of virtue. Just the opposite. Did I bring this here on the
sheet?
Yeah, we had serious problems with Shlomo's wives. Take a look on the flip side of your sheet. It's source number 9. This is a medrash from the medrash on Mishle. It appears also in the Gemara in an altered form. I brought you this one. Rabbi Levi tells the story. He quotes a pasuk and he says, "This was a rebuke for the time when the morning daily offering, the Karban Tamid, was brought at 4 hours of the day, which is not supposed to happen." What happened? Bat Paro made a sort of curtain on which she affixed types of stars and constellations, which she affixed over his bed. When Shlomo began to rise, he saw the stars and constellations, and so he slept until 4 hours of the day. Oh, looks like it's still nighttime. Guess I can go back to sleep for a little longer. It's easier than resetting the clock and hitting the snooze button. The Bat Paro, among others of his wives, is not depicted as a person of tremendous virtue. Shlomo's marriages tended to be political. They were matters of expedience. There's some discussion about the conversion level of the marriages to foreign princesses. And Shlomo tells us himself that he didn't find any satisfaction when he says in Koheles, "Isha achas me'elef lo matasi." Even in 1,000, I didn't find a single woman who I felt was up there. He says, one man, maybe you'll find a woman. I didn't find one in 1,000, from which the Gemara deduces that he actually had 1,000 wives. Presumably some of these were concubines. It's difficult to suggest that Shlomo is recording this with one of his wives in mind. He doesn't find an Eish Es Chayil, which is a tragic element in its own right and comes through in Koheles. But then who is being described here? So some suggest Eish Es Chayil refers to the Torah, right? Which is why we don't just have the men sing it Friday night, but everybody sings it and it's a reference to the Torah. And the truth is it fits Mishle. When you read through Mishle beginning to end, you see that he depicts Torah as a woman. He also depicts the Eitz Hara as a woman drawing you in other directions. But he depicts Torah as a woman trying to educate you, trying to teach you. The book is filled with that imagery. If you take a look in Mishle at some point, if you read the 9th parak, it talks about Chochma as the Eish Es Chayil, in fact. It talks about the Isha Zara, the strange woman who leads you astray. But take a look at the Rambam in source number 6, please. The Rambam in his introduction to Mora HaNevuchim, the Guide of the Perplexed. He makes a comment regarding how a mashal works, how a parable works. Amar HaChacham, the sage, said, and he's quoting Mishle, "Tapuche zav b'maskios kesef devar dibur al ofanav." Golden apples in silver settings, a statement properly stated. The word stated is omitted there, sorry about that. See how marvelous is this parable, meaning the pasuk from Mishle, describing a proper parable. It is saying that there are two aspects, the revealed and the hidden. And the revealed component should be good like silver, that's the silver setting. And the inner component should be even greater, that's the gold. Until the inner component compared to the revealed component is like gold beside silver. So he says, there are always levels to things. And it's possible that this praise of the Torah is the inner layer of what's going on in Eish Es Chayil. But it doesn't disqualify the silver external layer. There's still something there that we are meant to understand from the external. We don't omit the external. Yes?
Why can't you say that, you know, she's pretty sarcastic in the opening.
Yes.
That she's telling him off. That the rest of it is saying, listen, you got all these wives. Why didn't you look for this? This is the perfect wife for you.
Yes.
And you didn't bother.
Right. It's entirely possible that she's not talking about somebody specific at all. That she's simply saying, here's your laundry list. But I think I can prove that she does have somebody specific in mind. Another possible reference, and you mentioned this before, is Sarah. The beautiful Midrashim on Abraham's eulogy for Sarah. One of the most gripping lines when it says, "Va'Avraham Zakein Baba Yamim," after Sarah's death, and after he's buried her, and now he goes to find a wife for Yitzchak. So the Midrash comments, it then says, "Va'Avraham Zakein." How old is Abraham at this point? Over 137, because Sarah's 127 when she passes on, and he's 10 years her senior. He wasn't old when he was 136. But then 137 he is. Where's the light switch that went?
She kept him young,
says the Midrash. As long as Abraham has Sarah, he doesn't feel the effects of age. When he buries Sarah, at that point it's Abraham Zakein. Now he feels it. So take a look, please, at Medrash Tanchuma, source number 7. This is the beginning of a very long Medrash. I didn't want to translate the whole thing, so I did not bring the whole thing here. But he says, "Hadvarim al mi namru." These sentences from Esh Eschayil are said about whom? When we say mi yimsa, who can find? And he says, above it is written, "And Abraham came to eulogize Sarah and cry for her. He began crying and eulogizing. He said, 'Mi yimsa, when will I find another like you?'" That's Abraham's complaint. Eshet Chayil refers to Sarah as it is written, "You are an Isha of beautiful appearance. Her worth is distant from pearls, for she came from a distance, as it is written," and so on. Pasuk by pasuk, the Medrash goes through Esh Eschayil and shows how each line can be linked to an aspect of Sarah's life. And so that's another possibility. Another possibility, take a look at source number 8. I didn't bother to bring you the whole Medrash, I just brought you a paragraph there. The Medrash there on Mishle goes line by line through Esh Eschayil, explaining how each line relates to one of the great women of Tanakh. From Naama to Sarah to Rivka to Leah to Rachel to Batya, Yocheved, Miriam, Chana, Yael, the widow who fed Eliyahu, Rachav, Batsheva, Michal, Hatzlel, Ponit, who is Shimshon's mother, Elisheva, Sarah Bas Asher, Ovadia's wife, the Shunamit, and Rus. Rus gets the last four lines in Esh Eschayil. In this Medrash. Also an interesting idea. Certainly on a straight level, this is simply a description of the perfect woman. And that's what I brought in as source number 9, the Medrash on what happened with Bas Paro. And yes, it's Bathsheba expressing her frustration. That also explains the odd use of Chayil, interestingly. Look back, please, at source number 1. Specifically the third pasuk. Al titain lanashim chelecha. Do not give to women your chayil. Instead, eshes chayil mi yimsa doesn't mean a woman of chayil. A wife for your chayil. Don't give your chayil to women in general. Give your chayil to this woman. Which ruins all the A Woman of Valor poems and translations and artwork and everything else. Which is just too bad sometimes, because life does that to you. But it's the woman to whom you should give your strength. It's interesting to note, there is no reference in Esh Eschayil to the standard references of beauty seen elsewhere in Tanakh. Contrast it with Shir HaShirim, which is full of these... all symbolism granted, but it's full of all these depictions of beauty which don't show up in the Esh Eschayil poem at all. Sheker Achein ve'Evel Hayofi, you got it. But the Das Mikra commentary to Tanakh offers a small suggestion on which I want to expand. They suggest that Bathsheba is not giving a generic description, but that she's actually, as I said, talking about Ruth. And this makes so much sense. When you think about Bathsheba's life, which we described a little bit before, and you think about Ruth's life, you see what in Ruth's career would appeal to Bathsheba. Number 1, loyalty. Right? Bathsheba, through the coups, they try to lure her in. Adoniyahu tries to get her to go along. Bathsheba refuses to be lured in. Ruth stays with Naomi, right? Even when things are bitterly tough and she has nothing to gain. Both Bathsheba and Ruth are tenacious in dealing with tragedy. Remember that Bathsheba, it becomes pregnant from David initially, and she loses the baby. She lost her husband, she lost her baby, and she moves on. She manages somehow to survive it. Ruth loses her husband, loses her land, becomes impoverished, and still soldiers on. I think that trait is shared between them, and I think it appeals. Bathsheba can think about this great-grandmother of her husband and think, wow, I see something of her within my experience. And third, the subtle control. I love this, the joke. You've probably heard it before, but I really like it, so I'm going to retell it. The man who goes off to an assertiveness convention, right, and he comes home to his wife, and he says, wow, I really feel different now. Right? You know the joke? He says, you know what? Things are going to be different around here from now on. This is another part that we shouldn't go home with to your wife. He says, you know what? Someone's going to make me breakfast every morning and dinner every night. And you know who that's going to be? You, he says. And you know what else? Someone's going to prepare my paper for me in the morning and they're going to run me a hot bath. And you know who that's going to be? It's going to be you. And someone's going to lay out my clothing and bathe me and dress me. And you know who that's going to be? She says, yeah. The Chevra Kadisha.
You're right.
Bathsheba's record is such that Nathan the Navi knows to come to her in order to put a stop to the coup. She handles Adoniyahu's request for Avishag. Ruth, for her part, manages to get Boaz to marry her without having to actually make the request, even though she knows the story. Naomi has already filled her in on the story. But she manages to arrange it without having to actually say anything. He lets him draw his own conclusions. There's this sense, again, of sort of a subtle control of the situation.
That was with Naomi's guidance.
Yes, very much so. But Naomi doesn't give her the script. Naomi just says, go bathe yourself and anoint yourself with oil and go to Boaz tonight. And Ruth is the one who figures out the rest. Which is kind of scary when you think about it. I mean, a strange woman in this land, not knowing anything, and she's just going to go out there. I mean, that's a very frightening prospect. Anything can happen at that point. Also, though, if we look back at the prologue in source number one, we find Bathsheba advising Shlomo to imitate Boaz. She says to him, in Psukim Gimel to Zion, sentences 3-7, don't let yourself be swayed off of the path by women or wine. Think of Boaz, who has had his drink and has gone to sleep in the Goren, and there's a woman suddenly at his feet, and he doesn't get swayed off of his path. He does what's right. She says to him, take care of people who are in need, open your mouth for the mute and all of that, which is the tack that Boaz takes. And then further, within Eshes Chayil itself, she says, the husband should be at the shar, right? Nodava sha'arim ba'ala, the husband is known at the gates. Where does Boaz sit? Shar ha'ir, the gates of the city. I might be reading too much in there, but I think I'm within bounds. But also, the term Eshes Chayil itself. Let's take the easiest point. Who is the only woman in Tanakh to be called an Eshes Chayil by name? Oh, come now. Open up your Megillas Rus. Open up your Megillas Rus, please. Third Perek, sentence 11, in these five Megillot that we have here.
Sorry for interrupting. I just want to mention the 8 o'clock. That's perfect.
We're on pace.
Yeah, Brock, I'm going to the Shiva House.
Okay.
You know, Mrs. Wozniacki.
Okay. Got it. Okay, thank you. If you take a look, sentence 11, it's on page 58 in these books. Boaz's comment to Rus. Right? First, if you look earlier at sentence 7, you see where Boaz had drunk. Vayocha Boaz vayesh, he had drunk. Vayita libo, his heart is good, and he lies down, and suddenly there's this woman there in the granary. But in sentence 11, he says to her, "Va'ata biti, and now my daughter, al tiri'i, don't be afraid. Kol asher tomri eselach, everything you say, I will do for you. Ki yodea kol sha'ar ami, the entire gate of my nation knows. Ki eshes chayil at, you are an eshes chayil." That's the only woman in Tanakh to be described as eshes chayil. So to me, as far as I'm concerned, beginning, middle, end, eshes chayil is Rus. But there is more evidence to this. The term chayil is used in Tanakh to describe five different traits, all of which we find in association with Rus. Number one, I believe I gave you some of this here on the sheet. Yeah, I did. And actually there I gave you in source number 10, the pasuk from Rus. So you see it right there. But number one, in source number 11, the chayil is a reference to somebody being trustworthy. I gave you an example there. Vayomer Shlomo. Shlomo said, this is regarding Adoniyahu of all people, "Im yehiel ben chayil, if he will be somebody of chayil, somebody I can trust, then lo yipol misa'araso arza, not a hair of his head will fall to the ground. Vim ra'a tim yatzebo, but if evil is found in him, vomes, then he will die." He says, I want to know, is he going to be trustworthy? To be a person of chayil means to be a person you can trust. Well, that's something that's borne out in Eshes Chayil itself, right? You can pass them back there. When we say in Eshes Chayil, batach ba lebala, right? Her husband can trust her. Her husband's heart can trust her. And it certainly fits Ruth in terms of her trustworthiness for Naomi. Second, chayil reflects a person who acquires wealth. Pasuk in Yirmiyah, source number, I just gave away my sheet, source number 12. I will give your chayil and your storehouses to be despoiled. This is a warning from Yirmiyah. But the point is that the word chayil is used to refer to wealth that one has amassed. And indeed, that fits Eshes Chayil itself. When we talk about Darsha Tzemer, Upishtim and Haisak Hanio, Socher, she goes out and amasses wealth. Mimerchak Tavi Lachma, she brings her bread from afar. It fits the Eshes Chayil, and of course it fits Ruth, because Ruth goes out and gathers wealth from the fields for Naomi. Further, chayil is used sometimes in Tanakh to refer to a person of physical strength, a warrior even. Vatihi Yisrael, source 13, Shmona Meos Elef Ish Chayil, right? The Jews were 800,000 Ish Chayil, swordsmen, that's also found in the Eshes Chayil. It talks about having physical strength when it talks about Chagra Be'oz Masneha. She girds her loins with oz, with strength. And we find it with Ruth when we describe her as carrying home six measures of barley, Vayomed Sheish Se'orim, and the Medrash comments that she had miraculous strength to be able to carry all of that home. So Chayil in that sense fits Ruth as well. Chayil is also used to refer to somebody who is industrious, who takes the initiative. Take a look at source 14, a pasuk in Devar Hayamim. Va'acheihem ish chayil bekoach la'avodah. Their brothers were ish chayil, with strength to work. Well, the Eshes Chayil poem depicts the Eshes Chayil as being somebody who takes the initiative and goes out to work. And of course, Ruth takes the initiative first in joining Naomi and in approaching Boaz. And then finally, chayil is used in the Torah. Yeah.
Not just that, but she's not afraid to go work in the field. Also.
Right. Absolutely. And then finally, a chayil is a reference to a person of righteousness, of piety. When Moshe is supposed to pick the Zakenim, the elders, v'ata techazem yikol ha'am anshei chayil, you go see among the nation anshei chayil, people of chayil, God-fearing men of truth who despise profit. Chayil is a reference to righteousness, piety. It's found in Eshes Chayil a few times. We find these references to her righteousness and her piety. I gave you a few references there on the sheet. Mishlei 31:20, 25, and 30. And we know it in terms of Ruth's piety in converting. Right? When she says, your God is my God, I mean, that's the ultimate expression of piety and righteousness. You can't get any better than that. You have a Moabite accepting God. So all of this convinces me that Eshes Chayil is actually a reference to Ruth. To sum up what we've accomplished, we started out by looking at the poem itself, understanding where it fits into Mishlei as this piece of the 31st Perek. Praising the talking about how the husband is fortunate, but how she works hard, how she is generous, how she teaches generosity, and she is to be praised. It's addressed to Lemuel, and we showed how Lemuel is identified with Shlomo, whether directly or simply as a warning to him. And we said that it seems to be his mother speaking to him and telling him, this is the type of woman you should be seeking. It's difficult to say that this was an actual wife of his. He's describing an Eshes Chayil of his. It doesn't seem to fit at all the wives we know of for Shlomo. Yes, there is a layer of this that suggests it's a reference to the Torah, fitting Mishlei in general, which assigns the role of woman to Chachma, to wisdom. But as the Rambam notes, you can't go away from the simple read either. The simple read is also meant to be read. We noted the midrashic link between Eshes Chayil and Sarah, and Avram's eulogy for Sarah. We noted also the link between each line and women of Tanakh. We also noted the description of simply the perfect woman, and his mother saying to him, this is who you should seek to find. And we said, Al titeilan Hashem chaylecha was one part of that introduction. Don't give your chayil to women in general. Give your chayil to this woman. This is the woman who should be the woman of your chayil. But it really looks like it's a specific reference to Ruth. In terms of the parallels between Ruth's traits and Bathsheba's traits, and how Bathsheba would praise Ruth to Shlomo. Number one. Number two, the way that her comments to him sound like she's telling him to imitate Boaz. And then number three, in terms of the use of the term Chayil, which number one is identified with Ruth in the book of Ruth. And number two, all the different definitions that we can offer for Chayil based in Tanakh fit what's in Eshes Chayil and fit the life of Ruth. Without too much wedging. It seems to me that it's there. One last point, which I really, really like, from Shimshon Rafal Hirsch. We say, Eshes Chayil mi yimtza. Right? Who can find it? Right? But on the other hand, when you get to the end of the poem, you say, Rabos banos asu chayil. Many women have performed chayil. So what do you mean? Why is it so difficult to find her? But why is it so difficult? Rabos banos, granted, at alit al kulana, you rose above them all. Sorry, maybe I won't find the one who rose above them all, but rabos banos asu chayil. Many women have done it. So why is it so difficult to find? Malbim says, yeah, she's inaccessible, or more inaccessible, and more elusive than pearls. Yeah, granted, many women have done it, but they're still hard to find. That could be. But I like Rav Shimshon Rafal Hirsch's comment. Rav Shimshon Rafal Hirsch says, no. The problem is that it's Eshes Chayil miYimtza. If you're looking to find one, you know, one day I'm going to go out and date and I'm going to find the Eshes Chayil, that's the wrong approach. You have to earn her. The person who goes out, the man who goes out and says, I'm just going to find the Eshes Chayil, is barking up the wrong tree, so to speak. What he should be doing is working on himself to make sure that he is an Ish Chayil. Anshe Chayil, to use the reference from the elders, he has to make himself into an Ish Chayil such that he will deserve her, and then he'll be worthy, and he'll be matched up with an Eshes Chayil. It's not pshat, it's drash, but I really enjoy it. I like the idea. All right. Well, thank you very much.